Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and into the recording studio of the hottest shows on Broadway, off-Broadway, and on an audiobook platform near you. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to Kate Navin, the artistic producer at Audible Theater. That's Audible as in the Amazon-owned audiobook platform, which has, in the last few years, become a regular producer of theater both for stages and for earbuds. Audible has also partnered with Off-Broadway's Minetta Lane Theater to stage new shows that are also recorded and distributed via Audible, with a lineup that's included Billy Crudup and Harry Clark, Carey Mulligan in Girls and Boys, and Kate Mulgrew in The Half-Life of Marie Curie. More recently, Audible made news when it partnered with the Williamstown Theater Festival to make audio dramas of seven shows that would have made up the Summer Festival's 2020 season, before COVID-19 disrupted everyone's plans for large gatherings. Navin is in the virtual studio with me to tell us all about how that deal came about and how she imagines Audible working in and with the theater industry through the coronavirus shutdown and beyond. Hi, Kate. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So we're all wondering right now what theater is going to look like over the next several months as we figure out how soon we'll be able to gather in large groups again and what those gatherings will look like. And it seems like the Williamstown announcement was something that offered one option for how theater can look in the kind of sort of near-term future as we figure all this stuff out. Tell us a little bit about sort of how that partnership came about and whose idea it was.
Sure. I've been talking to Mandy for a while now. We've been looking for something to do together. And then as she was facing...
This is Mandy Greenfield, we should say, the artistic director at Williamstown.
Yes, Mandy Greenfield from Williamstown. And as the decision was approaching for what this summer was going to look like for Williamstown, she knew it would be different. She knew she wanted to figure out what might be possible in the face of what might become impossible. It was right before the decision was ultimately made. And she honestly just called me one morning and said, what if we recorded the whole season on Audible? And I said, yes, it was an easy yes.
Why?
Mandy's got great taste. She had put together a really exciting season, one that is a great mixture of classics and new work and familiar faces and new faces, which is a lot of what we're trying to do at Audible. And we had already had the conversation at Audible about what we could do in this moment, keeping theater artists employed, keeping them working, not just working for the sake of working, doing something artistically fulfilling. And so it felt like a perfect match. And we worked very quickly as the countdown of having to cancel the season came to a close.
Right. And were some of the, you mentioned some of the like familiar faces and then on some unfamiliar names with some new writers and some new talent. But we're talking like there's a Streetcar Named Desire with Audra McDonald and Carla Gugino and Bobby Cannavale. And then there are these five world premieres. Have you started to answer questions like how will these audio dramas sound? How will you do stage directions? Will there be a sound design? All those questions.
We have started to. We are certainly not done with that process. For the world premieres, obviously there was a development journey that they are already on, and we are going to continue that journey. These are plays, and they will have a life on the stage as well. And right. So that development will continue, and then we will figure out what that Audible production looks like as well. There will be sound design. There will be, you know, where appropriate and where possible, there will be slight adaptation to make sure it works in audio. We haven't quite figured out all the answers, but yes, the conversations have definitely begun.
And how do you yet know how and when people will record? Will they record presumably separately? Will they be recording at the same time so they can react off each other? I feel like there are all sorts of questions that are raised by this kind of new-ish version of doing this.
The plan is to record when people can safely assemble again, to do all of our work in preparation remotely. We will do all of the tools that everybody has been using to get there.
Right.
But we do assume that people will be able to be in a room together in groups of 10 or 20 much sooner then you can invite an audience into a space.
Right.
So it is our hope that we can do that this summer. Obviously, we don't know because the world changes every day, but we will record these in studio when it is safe to do so.
And I imagine that was important to you and to them, just in terms of capturing the sort of live feeling of acting, of a performance, in terms of having these people in the same room reacting off each other.
Yes, you know, it's so important to act together and be in a scene together. Yes, yeah. Very important to everybody.
Yeah. And so on your end, how are these productions, or do you envision these productions being different from kind of the more standard Audible theater offerings? It seems like a lot of the stuff you guys have on Audible Theater is sort of, you know, a solo show that makes the translation to audio drama, the leap to audio drama, pretty intuitive in terms of how, you know, someone who's maybe not familiar with it can imagine a show, you know, moving into an audio drama. How different is this?
It's not that different from what the work that we've been doing, not all of it released yet. We have released some multicast dramas.
Yeah.
They are the conversations that we've been having. So it is a continuation of it. What's really unique about this experience is that slate mixture coming at once, rather than having a conversation about a single property. We are having a cohesive conversation about what does look the same across the projects, what is unique and bespoke for each needs, what the individual needs are on each. But this is territory we have been entering into already, both through our emerging playwright commissions and some things coming that you'll know about.
Right. And are other theater festivals or producers or are other people in the industry sort of reaching out to you about something with similar ideas or similar talking about sort of similar thoughts in terms of looking ahead?
Yes. We're having a lot of conversations with producers, with theaters, nothing else that looks like an entire season at this point. But yeah, there's a lot of heartbreak around the abrupt stop that happened in March. And then this continuation of the unknown. So we are talking about what role we can play within the community to preserve that work, to make sure that it didn't get lost, and or to also keep it top of mind for it to come back next season. So we're figuring out how we can best serve those needs in this moment. It's pretty, I feel lucky to be able to have that conversation.
And in terms of audience access for specifically the Williamstown season, how would a listener go about accessing that?
There are a lot of ways to hear our titles. The Audible membership, which is, you know, you get a credit every month to put towards any title that you want. We also have what we refer to as our member benefit, which is an additional choice of free titles every month, and you can choose two. And very often theater titles are highlighted as part of that. Many of our titles are part of that special promotion and get a lot of attention. And then you can, anybody can come to our website and purchase a title a la carte at any time.
Right. And I imagine the theater, Williamstown sort of, kind of, I'm not sure if they have subscribers, but their usual sort of season sort of ticket holder space, an audience will also have sort of, the special, like their version of buying tickets for the season will this year be buying tickets for or buying audio tickets for this audio season.
Yes, and we are going to give them, you know, I don't know exactly how yet. This all will happen very quickly, but they're going to have special access to the season. That is part of what we wanted to offer to Williamstown so that they can continue to speak to, they call them their bundle ticket buyers.
I see.
We wanted to be able to continue to talk to them during this summer.
Right. And let's talk a little bit about Audible Theater overall. What's your mandate as artistic producer?
So Audible Theater really started out of a desire to make theater available to more people. I was brought in just over 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And our founder, Don Katz, who is an avid theater goer and a theater lover, said, how can we employ underemployed theater artists, make producing shows easier so that we're providing more opportunity? It's never going to be easy, but what can we do to provide more opportunity in that space?
Producing stage shows or producing audio dramas?
producing stage shows as well. Okay. What role can we play to make it easier for other producers as well as us? But what can we do for the industry?
Yeah.
And then how do we get access for people who maybe can't get to New York? They can listen to it wherever they are, and it's not location dependent or date dependent. If you miss a run, you can still experience it.
Right.
So that remains the mandate today. And we do that in several ways, but at the core, it is about making this work available to more people in more places.
And what kind of theater content, if any, did Audible have before you came on?
Very little. There were certainly titles here and there, and there are other, you know, colleagues like LA Theater Works who certainly have a catalog, and it is available on the website. But really, it wasn't an offering on the platform before I came.
Right. And you were an agent before joining Audible. How did that background serve you in terms of what you do now?
It has served me incredibly well. Obviously, from the obvious things of having relationships with artists and being able to call them and run ideas by them, but also bring them into the fold. But also, I think that my role as an agent, I really saw it as a problem solver. I know that producers ultimately are trying to get the show up, and I know that artists need what they need. And so I have a lot of experience finding that middle ground. And that has served me well in this role when trying to play with different things and bring people to a new idea.
Does your role at Audible kind of correspond at all with what we might think of as an artistic director role for, you know, a theater or a nonprofit, or like Mandy's position at Williamstown or something?
Yes, that is the closest role. I just am not a director.
Right.
And so often that is the assumption with that title, that you are also going to direct some of the work, and a lot of them do. So producer, artistic producer felt more accurate for me.
Yeah. And so tell us about the audience for audio theater content. Who are you finding seeks this stuff out, and who in particular is responding to it now that you're offering it?
It's been very exciting. A lot of people are experiencing it, especially given that member benefit option. We are finding, yes, the theater goers are showing up to listen to it and catch that show that they missed. But we also have this core group of book lovers who understand literature and understand great writing, who are trying it out and really responding positively. It's interesting to watch them. Watch meetings, sort of in the member reviews, they can write in what they think of it. Some people sort of in a very inquisitive way saying, this doesn't feel like a book, or this is more like a short story, trying to figure out what it is. But overall, they're very positive about it. And then the best thing that I'm seeing is that these individuals who are sort of sticking with us and coming back every month for the next Audible Theater title are also starting to buy tickets to their local theater. We've received some comments along those lines, which is just thrilling to me.
Yeah. And does the demographic look like the predominant sort of, you know, ticket buying demographic on Broadway and everywhere else, the sort of older, white, often female?
We have a pretty diverse member base. Yes, we have that. You know, there are the commuting demographics in the urban areas and that might look similar, but we also have truck drivers that take really long drives and need entertainment in that place. It really is a much more diverse, we have a more diverse political backgrounds that we find. I think that we are starting to see a younger audience. We're starting to see that at the Minetta as well, which is exciting. So it's yes, and we are seeing these other audiences as well engage.
What has been particularly popular for you? What shows have been particularly popular for you?
Evil Eye, which is one of our emerging playwright commissions. It's written by a playwright named Madhuri Shekhar. Really, really popular. Won an audio award. It's really fantastic. Written for audio specifically. It's this great story about a mother-daughter, mother in India, daughter in the US, so they can only talk by phone. So it's a great medium to tell that story. And then The Half-Life of Marie Curie has been a real big hit on the platform. And that's Lauren Gunderson's commission that we produced at the Minetta with Kate Mulgrew and Francesca Faradani in the fall.
And
our members really love that too. They tend to love learning This is a story about two women that they didn't quite know, this friendship. So it's been a big hit.
Yeah, I was just going to ask sort of how kind of discovery works for these shows, particularly these shows that are popular, like you mentioned Evil Eye, which is a thing that, you know, theater folks might not have heard of if they're not, you know, on the Audible platform.
Right. And vice versa. We've got non-theater going people trying out theater titles that they wouldn't have known about. And sort of, so it is going in both directions, which is pretty exciting.
And have you seen listener growth for this fair over, since you've been doing it for the last few years?
Yes.
And has it grown over the last several weeks?
You know, it's a changing world. It's hard to speak to that sort of in this moment. I think we're all sort of figuring out what the world looks like. I'm certainly seeing an overall increase again in sort of the interest in the titles. It's a little, you know, it's hard to say much more at this point.
Yeah. And what are some of the obstacles for you, or have been some of the obstacles in terms of producing this content and, you know, sort of, you know, getting people to sort of pay attention to it once you do?
That's a great question. I think it's just the fact that it's new. And I think that that is sometimes hard for people to crack and decide, especially for artists who see their work and see their stories, you know, they decide to write it in a medium on purpose, and sort of the conversation about adapting it and not, you know, no, it's not that I've run against hesitation exactly. It's just more a question of, can I do this? How do I do this? What's the vocabulary? Because it's relatively new. That's the biggest hurdle, and it's obviously being overcome.
I'll have more with Kate right after the break. Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
And now here's more with Kate Navin of Audible Theater. One of the things you mentioned, you alluded to the commissioning program.
Yes.
Audible, I feel like, has a pretty notable commitment to new work, especially since I feel like new work kind of raises the degree of difficulty in terms of getting, you know, getting ears on it, in terms of like if it got this unfamiliar title with an unfamiliar, you know, writer, for instance, then you guys have to work a little harder to sort of educate consumers about what it is and why they might be interested in it. Explain to me the commitment to new writers and new creators and new work.
The best news on that front is that that is where this initiative started from. That was Don Katz's priority. And so when the head of the company says, make this a priority, let's shine a spotlight, it is easier to get other teams to support it and easier to get marketing to sort of pay attention and talk about how to best elevate the material. That's where I've been lucky with my colleagues at Audible. They've also been very supportive, you know, even without Don saying so, but that definitely helps. And the work is good. So that's always been helpful. And I wasn't surprised by it, but it was easy to share Evil Eye with colleagues and say, you know, listen to this. And they would get excited about it and say, okay, we've got to figure this out. How do we make sure we get this in front of customers in a way that gets them excited and, you know, gets them engaged on it? And then the thing that I think we all sort of know, which is buzz and word of mouth helps a lot. So when something starts to get great reviews and starts to get attention on the website, it helps. And so I don't know if that answers the question exactly, but that's what it's looked like.
Yeah. And what can you characterize a show that strikes you as a good fit for Audible? Is there sort of are there certain elements that kind of cohere across all the offerings?
What works great about the theater industry as a whole is that it is such a language-driven medium. And so something that is about the words to begin with is going to translate well into audio. I think that most things can work with a little bit of a lift. Some things, obviously, you know, if there's a super visual element or a surprise that the audience, if there's information the audience needs to know, but you can't talk about because the characters aren't supposed to know, that becomes tricky. Yeah. Farce is tricky.
I was going to say the only play that I could think of that I could imagine sort of not at all working as an audio drama was Noises Off. Like, I don't know how you make that work, right? Yeah.
I don't know how you make Noises Off work. And there are others in those veins.
Right.
Somebody brilliant will figure it out
and
adapt it. Yes, exactly. But the rest of it, you know, even if you need somebody to know that, even if you need a listener to know that somebody's drinking a coffee cup, you can find a clever way of saying that in a line that isn't on the nose, because generally playwrights put it in the text anyway.
Right. How often, or if ever, is there sort of an adjustment to lines for the audio version to sort of solve some of those problems that you're talking about? Is that a thing that happens regularly?
Yes. I would say, you know, except in the case of estates,
right,
it has happened 100% of the time. Again, sometimes it's just a little thing. Sometimes it's bigger with an act of God. Right. You know, the playwright moved it from a theater to a listening experience so that the jokes work in that environment.
And we should say that this is Act of God, the sort of solo comedy.
Yes.
Sean Hayes was, you have the Sean Hayes in it, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. He did that for us.
Yeah. And so now also another element of this is the Minetta Lane kind of partnership that you have where Audible produces these shows that that are then recorded and distributed. What's valuable for Audible about having this live theater as opposed to just, and these live theater runs, as opposed to just, you know, finding a play you like and recording it?
It does two things for us that are important. And one is that there is some content that is better recorded live, that the audience should be part of the audio experience. You think of Alan Cumming's show, Legal Immigrant. There's not just the energy, but actual sort of conversation with the audience that if you take that out, it just changes what the content is so dramatically and in a way that you don't want. So it makes sense to record that live and make it, that experience be the audio version. There's also some experimenting that we're doing with the producing model at the Minetta. That makes it sound a little bit more mysterious than I mean it, but we're just sort of seeing what does it look like to try and bring in a different audience? What does it look like to do these shorter runs? How can we create flexible models so that actors can come and do a run that fits within their film schedule? I mean, that's the Girls and Boys story with Carrie Mulligan.
Mm-hmm.
Her schedule is difficult and she can't do a commercial run. And she wanted to bring that show to New York. And it was a great fit for us for that reason. We're not looking to produce in the same way. There are brilliant producers who can do that. But for Carrie, we were able to facilitate it. That's the reason for those runs.
Yeah. And you have credits. Audible has credits as a Broadway producer as well, particularly for Seawall, A Life and Latin History for Morons. Is that a thing that you envision Audible will be doing more of? And I'm assuming you got involved in these projects because you would end up recording and distributing them.
Yes, we will not do it if we're not doing the audio.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Right. It's not the side gig that Audible has going, Broadway producing. Yeah.
Right. It was because of the material seemed like such an important fit to the platform. We know that even with stars of that magnitude, those shows are difficult to sort of make happen. And so it felt like it was a good partner opportunity. We love the producers that were involved with those. Yes, you'll see more of it. But as you said, it's not our primary goal.
And what you started to talk a little bit about this in terms of figuring out how the form works for a lot of the creators, but in terms of the sort of theater industry overall, what was the reaction to Audible coming in? Was there any concern, you know, 10 or 50, even longer now, 15 years ago, people were concerned about, you know, capturing, particularly like video captures of shows because it would cannibalize, you know, the audience for the live show, et cetera, et cetera. And much of those are proving sort of groundless. But did you encounter any resistance in terms of talking to people about what and how the industry and Audible could work together?
Yes, there is that concern about cannibalization. As you say, it has proven to not be the case. But at the most we've ever seen hesitation on is the timing of a release.
Right. Yeah. And so what is the sort of broad vision that that Audible is sort of coming to in terms of how the work you guys do kind of fits into the broader industry and how they support one another?
I think we can work beautifully together in sort of a two-way street kind of way. We're finding audience that isn't yet buying tickets to theater, and theaters incubate great projects. So I think there's just this beautiful sort of harmonious relationship that we can have together. And I also think that theater needs a little bit of a PR campaign. And I mean that with the love that I have for the industry, but I've even run across in some of my internal conversations, people saying, so is the genre theater? And me saying, well, no, theater is so many things. There's theater stories about sports, and there's theater stories about scientists, and there's theater stories that are comedies. And I think that we've sort of need to break down this wall a bit of what theater is and can be, and that will invite more people into our theaters to come experience it. And that's something that I really feel passionate about doing at Audible. I think we're doing a great job already, and I'm excited to continue that conversation more.
And what does continuing that conversation look like, actually? What are some of the initiatives that maybe we haven't talked about that you've got going and that you've got coming up that we should know about?
As we build out our catalog, we're able to talk to our membership more about the offering. So there's that piece of it. And it is a large a membership, right? It's a big audience that we can have that conversation with. It is also further commissioning and giving playwrights a home and a way to flex their artistic muscles in this moment, which I think is incredibly important, and keep that going. And I think that, I mean, really in this moment, in the time of our social distancing, I think that we're helping keep theater top of mind, and we're going to, you know, we've made some titles free to everybody in this for another 6 weeks so that people can engage with the art form at a time when they need to. We're trying to be supportive. We're, like I said, you know, we're talking to these producers about what we can preserve and revive and keep going. So in the short term, there's a lot going on as far as initiatives go. But yeah, long-term to me, it's just continuing to bring that variety to our membership and beyond about what theater means.
And to get really sort of nuts and bolts with this, are there, you know, you yourself used to be an agent. Is there a standard now for kind of how these deals work in terms of, you know, like how does one get paid? Do you get paid a fee upfront? Are there royalties or residuals or some version of that? I feel like because this is like this is like a combination of theater and recorded, that must have taken some sort of hammering out, and maybe still does on a like per deal basis. I don't know.
Yeah, it's still an evolution, and it is kind of case by case on each project. Every project has different needs. But yes, everybody gets compensated for their role. And that does include if it's on stage, obviously, but if they're performing on stage and recording, that is treated as two distinct jobs. Right. And that's, you know, acknowledged. But it's really case by case and still an evolution, I think.
Yeah. And what kinds of projects haven't you been able to do yet with Audible Theater that you're really interested in sort of creating and getting available for listeners?
The thing we haven't done that I really want to see happen, and I think may in the very near future, but is that we have a title in audio first, and then it's done on the stage. And whether it's by us or by somebody else, I think it would actually be more exciting if it was somebody else. Yeah. I would love to see that we were able to introduce an audience to it. It was still worth producing because it's still brilliant material. And you see that there is an audience that wants to experience that live as well.
It seems like the world premieres that we talked about with Williamstown would be natural candidates for such a thing.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So hopefully.
What else do you have coming up that we should be aware of in terms of offerings that people should be looking for over the coming months to keep them occupied during these long theaterless evenings?
Yes. Seawall Life is releasing April 30th. Beautiful recording done by Jake Gyllenhaal and Tom Sturridge. Very excited about that one coming out. We also have the release of In Love and Struggle that we recorded at the Minetta, which is a brilliant evening of stories by women of color in this political moment. All sorts of short stories. We had Sarah Jones. We had Anita Hill. It was really an incredible evening, and that'll be coming out soon, as well as Peculiar Patriot, Liza Jesse Peterson's piece that she's been touring. We recorded that live as well. Lots going on, but those three top of mind.
Great. Well, we will look forward to hearing those and to hearing the Williamstown Theater when Audible has them. Thanks so much for chatting with me, Kate. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me. Very happy to do it.
That was Kate Navin, the artistic producer of Audible Theater. If you like what you're hearing on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, and you can subscribe and find past episodes there and on all the other pod places, including Spotify and on the Broadway Podcast Network, which is a great place to find more theater for your ears. I'll be back next week with another new episode. Thanks for listening, and see you soon.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.